Night on BBC Sounds.
It's midday and time for Private Passions, and Michael Barclay's guest is the architect and broadcaster Francesco D'Amosto.
With his shock of white hair, boundless energy, and unmistakable accent, Francesco D'Amosto is, for many of us, the quintessential Venetian. His distant ancestors were some of the first settlers to colonise the swampy islands, which were to become Venice, fleeing Attila the Hun in the 5th century, and since then, the D'Amosto family has been at the forefront of Venetian public life. One of the team of architects who restored the Opera House in Venice after a devastating fire in 1996, Francesco shot to fame with his BBC television series exploring Venice, Italy and the Mediterranean. And with his English wife Jane, he's at the heart of the campaign to find a sustainable future for this most beautiful and vulnerable city. Francesco, you're talking to me from Venice today. How I wish I was there with you. You live in a 16th century palazzo just off the Grand Canal. Can you describe the house and who lives there with you?
There is all my family, my parents. Also, there are many, many floors. So there are more than 20 families living in the palazzo. So it's like a community in a certain way, that there are people that lives and works in Venice. So he's still giving a soul to the town. So in a certain way, it's a duty that I have to take on. But I was born there. But sometimes I feel like a burden of that palace on my shoulders. Not only the story of the family, but also the burden of maintaining a palace of that dimension.
You've brought us music today which conjures up Italy in all her glory, and we're going to hear lots of Puccini, as well as Verdi, and the hugely popular singer Mina. But first, a Venetian composer whose music has conquered the world, Vivaldi. What do you want to hear from The Four Seasons, and what does it evoke for you?
There is one piece that I really love, that is the first part of Winter. You still feel the quiet emotion, the quiet, the timing going slow of the winter, but at a certain moment towards the end, is giving a strength like we are preparing for the energy when is coming the spring, the hope of a new future.
Adrian Chandler was both soloist and director in Winter from the Four Seasons by Vivaldi. And of course, we couldn't resist choosing the group with the title La Serenissima. You qualified, Francesco D'Amosto, as an architect in your 30s. Not long afterwards, you witnessed that terrible fire in 1996, which devastated the Fenice Opera House. Of course, Fenice means Phoenix, doesn't it? So perhaps an unsurprising name, considering this was the second time in its history that it had burned down?
Yes, because I think it happened in the 18th century the first time. And it was quite incredible because I was just married and we were waiting for our first child. So we find an apartment that was just looking to the Fenice Theater. And I remember that evening we were having a dinner. At a certain moment, the owner of the house phoned me to ask me if I was burning his house. And obviously, I always feel guilty. I'm a Catholic, so everything I do, I'm guilty. And so I went up on the terrace, and wow, was incredible. All the theater was completely burning. And my first idea was my wife gave me a video camera, and I took it, and I filmed all the fire. And so my films were used by BBC, by French television.
I've seen those pictures, and you worked as one of the architects rebuilding the theatre, which reopened in 2003, an exact recreation of the previous building. As an architect working in Venice, do you feel constrained by tradition?
Oh, that is a great question. I learned how much is important to make a connection between the past and the present, but it needs to have a dialogue between the different times. But at the same time, sometimes I'm constrained in the creativity when you have just thinking to restore, because the rules are quite strict in Venice. I remember I did a design for a square in one of the islands of Venice, in Pelestrina, and they asked me to design the square that was just a parking place with earth. And I remember I tried to make a connection between how was the position of the houses, the entrance, and there I managed to create something that is connected to the past, but there's some ideas of creativity. There, like I put a sundial where is your shadow that gives the time, like we humans are creating our future.
I've often wondered whether modern engineering methods have been able to replace some of the many thousands of tree trunks which have traditionally been sunk into the lagoon to create foundations for buildings.
So I was controlling public works for 2 years here in Venice, and I remember they were using a lot of concrete. But if I have to tell you the truth, I think that the foundation of Venice done in wood, they will be always better than any concrete that you put in Venice. Because if you put the poles inside the mud, and it's important that they don't get oxygen, but they stay always inside the mud, slowly the wood become calcificated and will be stronger and stronger. If you use the concrete with inside iron, not in a short, but in a long time, there will be the rust, and the iron will explode, and so the stability of the houses will be worse. So I imagine if Venice was built in concrete, will not exist anymore. But the sense that it's being in wood, inside the mud, they will resist forever.
Music now from Verdi's Il Trovatore, which reminds you, I think, of visits to the opera house with your mother when you were a child?
Ah, completely. I loved it. And I remember when my mother was taking me there, and I was quite young. And sometimes I have to admit that I was asking to my mother to go to the toilet, and I love to lose myself in the labyrinth of the theater. And maybe that was very useful for when I had to design the theater. It was quite curious how strange, after 40 years, things come back and useful.
The
Gino Penno with Di Quella Pira from the third act of Verdi's Il Trovatore. Antonio Narducci conducting a studio orchestra in that 1954 recording. Everybody thinks of gondolas and boats as being the most wonderful and romantic image. But what are the practicalities, Francesco D'Amosto, and the inconveniences of living in a city where everything and everyone has to travel by boat?
Yes. A week ago or 10 days ago, there was my father that poor during the night, he fell down and he banged his head. We found him in the morning saying, help, help, poor him. Then we didn't know if to take him to the hospital. He's 98, can you imagine? So, you know, to go to the hospital is not easy. You have to call the ambulance. They have to come. They have to get to come up with the staircase. They have to use a chair and move him. And then you have to go arrive to the hospital. Then it's all manual, you know, like everything has to be done by hand. But at the end, after 2 days, he decided he wanted to go. We went there, and I remember the funny thing is when they saw that everything was okay, they said, we are sending him back tonight. Do you need a boat or you go by foot? I thought to myself, I have a problem with the hip. He's 98. He's banging his head on the floor. How can I go by foot home? Maybe they were thinking to another thing. No, Venice in a lot of things is quite more difficult than other towns, and in this way also more expensive for these things. So I can understand why a lot of people prefer to go to live outside, because everything is more easy. We have to admit that.
We're now going to move to Verdi's Otello and an aria sung by Desdemona, the Ave Maria. It's sung just before she's murdered. Why have you honed in on this, Francesco?
I love that music because there is so much emotion inside that. It's something that is like you're risking to lose everything, that in love is that. And then is something, a pain that is so deep in your heart that you say it with very delicate, but like praying.
Lisa Davidson as Desdemona with the Ave Maria from the last act of Verdi's Otello. Mark Elder conducting the London Philharmonic Orchestra with the mezzo-soprano Rosalind Plowright. Your family, Francesco, is rooted in Venice, but I think you left Venice at about the age of 18 to go to university, and then you travelled extensively for years all over the world.
But I have a lot of occasion to work in cinema in Rome, then I went to Africa, then I went to Paris. And I was just coming back from the exams. So I had the chance to live my desire, but at the same time maintaining my the career as architect. And that I have to admit that was a great luck that I didn't have to do like the university in a strict time, but I could join the because also in architecture there was scenography, there was cinema, there was photography. So I work in Rome as assistant director, and at the beginning I chose engineering, but it was a little boring. And then when I chose architecture, I saw that there were so many other roles that it could open to me.
And let's recall your time in Paris, because I think that's where this next music came from your time there.
I remember I left Rome to Paris to do this documentary, but then I entered to write a screenplay. But I remember I was there, I was not knowing French, so I started too much to enter inside this story, and I was leaving to write without sleeping, and so I went crazy. I stopped the creativity for a while. If not, who knows where I was going to.
How wonderful that you've chosen two examples of music conjuring up the cold of winter. Because this is from King Arthur. It's the cold song, isn't it?
Yeah. It's something that I don't know how, but this song, it is like making... there is a suffering that is with love, but also a suffering of life in a certain way. And there is this sufferance inside, and it's difficult to go out of it. And you see, it's like a lament. It's like you feel is in the rhythm. It's something that is, is painful. But I remember that period, so I choose this one because it was not easy, that period, but thanks God I went out of it.
Scared, for my breath.
Sometimes I feel that this music is like a soundtrack of my life. There are different periods and different emotions. They wake me up emotion and memories that are very strong in my mind. And when I hear those songs, it's like comes back part of my life and the part of emotions that sometimes they were good, sometimes they were sad. But his life, that is it.
Tim Mead was the countertenor in What Power Art Thou, the Cold Song from Purcell's King Arthur. François Lazarevich was directing Les Musiciens de Saint-Julien. And you can find details of all the music chosen by my guest today, Francesco D'Amosto, if you visit the Private Passions webpage. And if you go to BBC Sounds, you can, of course, download hundreds of previous editions, which you can enjoy at your leisure. Francesco, Venice has been a tourist city for centuries, but the explosion of tourism in recent decades means the resident population has somewhat dwindled from 170,000 in the 50s to about 40,000 today. And of course, more and more homes are becoming hotels and holiday lets. How can the city retain its integrity and avoid becoming simply a kind of stage set for tourists?
That is the big problem. That is why my father always thought to rent the apartments that there are in the palace to people that live and work in Venice without giving to tourists or bed and breakfast, because the important thing is to maintain the soul of Venice. From the other side, I don't think you can change a lot of this future. A lot of factories has moved away from the 1966, when all the ground floors had been flooded, a lot of people went away. And now the prices are growing and growing because Venice is considered, like it is, a place where people, everyone wants to come to have a look of this strange place that is built on water. But in this way, the life of in the town is of people that works and live here, you see that a lot of shops are disappearing. Just in this period of the pandemic, now maybe there will be a starting again, but so many shops that was dedicated to tourism, they had to shut down. So in this way, you can understand that is not the right direction. Now there is a lot of people that are rethinking, like I was speaking the other day with the director of architecture of Venice, that Venice can be a town for students, or there is the new design by Chipperfield related to the Procuratie Vecchie that is going to help the Humanities Center. There is a big center of culture. So in a certain way, I think it's important that the Venetian can be connected to all these activities that will be important for our world. Like, in a certain way, they want to decide to make Venice as a capital of sustainability. If we save Venice, we can save the world. And what about us? What about the Venetian? And so I don't know, it's not easy to go back in how it was before when I was young. I remember the tourists were coming only in the period of August, July, but all the other period were a normal town like all the others, with the iron man, with the worker with the wood, the baker, and everything was normal. Slowly, they would start to disappear, one after the other one, for masks, glass, shops, Gucci, Prada, because the people were coming, the plane were less expensive, and all the people wanted a glimpse of Venice. So it's not easy.
Let's talk a little bit about one of your other passions, Francesco, film, because we're going to hear the final part of Ennio Morricone's score for Sergio Leone's spaghetti western, Once Upon a Time in the West. Leone thought the music was so important that he had Morricone compose it in advance of filming so that he could play it on set to the actors.
And I remember I had the luck to see also this music played by Ennio Morricone in St. Mark's Square. And so it was something really fantastic. It was touching my heart. You know when you feel on your back all the zzz, the brevity.
The hairs on your back rose.
Yeah, exactly. The hairs on my back. And a lot of these songs that they put it, when I listen them, I feel the hairs on my back.
Once Upon a Time in the West, Ennio Morricone's soundtrack to the 1968 film with the vocalist Ada Del Orso. Francesco, tell me about your wife, Jane. She's an environmental scientist who's co-written a book about the Venetian lagoon's flood defences, a huge concern as the sea levels rise with climate change.
Yeah, she was born in South Africa. She lived in London, in England. And when she came here, she understood this was the place that she has to save it. Because she saw in the lagoon of Venice, in the nature and everything, and she's giving her life to this. And she really believe, against all odds that is coming, all the problems, she never stops. She's never disarmed, and she goes on without maybe she has doubts, but she doesn't show it. She goes on. She's strong. She is something that I really admire. This is her place. This is our planet, and we have to go on. We have to try, at least.
What does she think should be done to protect the city?
Oh, boy, in this moment, she is working quite well with an NGO. It's called We Are Here Venice. Now, she won a project from the European Council to make a living again in the salt marshes that defend the lagoon from the sea. So now she's studying all the plant, because it's very interesting, because when you recreate salt marshes, it's very important that the plant, you put them in the salt marshes, they make their roots, and so the salt marshes will resist to the erosion. But at the same time, not only that is great, but the salt marshes and the plants, they attract the CO2 and they put inside their roots. So it doesn't go out like in a forest when the leaves goes down and they go rotten, they create CO2. Instead, these plants that are in the lagoon, they never go rotten, so they never create CO2. But it's important to save the lagoon, because if we don't save the lagoon, also the town is lost.
Are there other environmental threats that face Venice apart from the sea?
The pollution of the big cruise ships, that for the pandemic they stopped for a while. Let's see what is happening next, because if now they are going to... They have taken out, there is a picture of my wife that is fighting against the cruise ships that went all over the world. It was quite funny. Quite strong picture, very iconic. On the front there is this big cruise ship that is passing on, and then you see this woman that is rowing and is like watching the cruise ship. Listen, I'm here, come. Come on, come against me. I'm here, I'm waiting for you.
Have you managed to ban the cruise ships at all? Because there was talk of that.
They stopped the cruise ship to pass in front of St. Mark, but they want to maintain them inside the lagoon. So we will have all the pollution of them, and they are dredging the channels to make that entering in. So I don't know anymore which is worst. I think there is a lot of cities around the world that they don't want anymore these big ships arriving.
Let's move to that song now from the hugely popular singer Mina Mazzini. Parole, parole. Why do you love this song so much?
I love that song. At first, it makes me happy. It was a period of my life. I was doing a TV series that was around Italy, because my mother is from Sicily. So I was going with an Alfa Romeo open from Venice to Sicily, seeing all the tradition, art, culture, kitchen. And I remember it was fantastic to run away with this car. Terrible for the environment, but was like freedom. It was like living on the road. And that that song, I when I love a song, I can put it hundreds of times. I can until it go out of my mind, and also singing on it. I loved it. It makes me is a song of love in which the woman say, there is the man that is trying, and the woman is saying words, going facts. But this, her voice is so fantastic, so well done. I love it. It makes me happy. It makes me happy.
cosa mi succede stasera. Ti guardo ed è come la prima volta.
Che cosa sei? Che cosa sei? Che cosa sei?
Non vorrei parlare.
Cosa sei?
Ma tu sei la frase d'amore cominciata e mai finita.
Non cambi mai, non cambi mai, non cambi mai.
Tu sei il mio ieri, il mio oggi.
Proprio mai.
E il mio sempre, inquietudine.
Adesso ormai ci puoi provare. Chiamami tormento, dai, già che ci sei.
Tu sei come il vento che porta i violini e le rose.
Caramelle, non ne voglio più.
Certe volte non ti capisco.
Le rose e i violini, questa sera raccontami un'altra. Violini e rose li posso sentire. Quando la cosa mi va, se mi va, quando è il momento e dopo si vedrà.
Una parola ancora.
Parole, parole, parole.
Ascoltami.
Parole, parole, parole.
Ti prego.
Parole, parole, parole.
Io ti giuro.
Parole, parole, parole.
Parlarti come la prima volta.
Che cosa sei? Che cosa sei? Che cosa sei?
No, non dire nulla. C'è la notte che parla.
Cosa sei?
La romantica notte.
Non cambi mai, non cambi mai, non cambi mai.
Tu sei il mio sogno proibito.
Proprio mai.
È vero, speranza.
Nessuno più ti può fermare. Chiamami passione, dai, hai visto mai.
Si spegne nei tuoi occhi la luna e si accendono i grilli.
Caramelle, non ne voglio più.
Se tu non ci fossi, bisognerebbe inventarti.
La luna è di grilli, normalmente mi tengono sveglia. Mentre io voglio dormire, sognare, l'uomo che a volte c'è quando c'è, che parla meno, ma può piacere a me.
Una parola ancora.
Parole, parole, parole.
Ascoltami.
Parole, parole, parole.
Ti prego.
Parole, parole, parole.
Io ti giuro.
Parole, 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 parole.
Che cosa sei?
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 Parole, 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 soltanto parole, parole tra noi.
Mina Mazzini and Alberto Lupo with Parole, Parole, Words, Words, released in 1972. It's great.
Yeah, I was dancing on the chair, I can imagine. I loved it.
Francesco da Mosta. Venice has been connected to the mainland for more than 150 years, but does the city still feel like a separate entity to the rest of Italy, to somebody like you?
Ah, totally. Yes, I think that there is still a point of view that is, you know, it's people of islands that are strange. I see also my mother is from Sicily, so I'm a son of one person from Venice, one person from Sicily.
You are a Count Francesco. You have a title and you come from an ancient noble family. What does being an aristocrat mean in modern Italy? Are you treated any differently or does it really not make any difference at all these days?
But totally doesn't make any difference, but if I have to tell you the truth, when I was young, I was always trying that the people didn't know my surname, so I didn't, because I had a problem when I was at school and they knew my name. So when I was going around with sailing boats or other things, I always saying my name, and very often if they make, like, they call me Stefano or with other names, I love it. I never say there was another name. So I was more free, if I have to tell you the truth. Less they know, and less I was free of doing my life.
You've got four children. Do you think they will continue the D'Amosto line in Venice?
Who knows? Who knows?
How would you feel if they didn't want to maintain the palazzo and decided to go elsewhere, lead different lives?
Let's see if they will manage. We'll try to make it best. But the first one is a doctor, and now she's out of Venice. Another one is working on ships, on boats, and another one is more an artist, is working on films. I think that, and the last one is young, but I think all of them, I hope they will find their way to love Venice, but if they can work also outside, going outside, like the old Venetians, that was our way of living, going away and come back. And in a certain way that they will have always, and I think they have in their soul, Venice. It's difficult when you are born even to hate it. But I see in the eyes of my children that when they come back to Venice, like my daughter that is often away now, when she comes back, it opened her heart just to go around the roads of Venice and losing yourself in the labyrinth.
Music, which actually reminds you, I think, of Venice during the pandemic. We saw on the news those extraordinary pictures of a deserted St. Mark's Square, dolphins swimming in the Grand Canal. Of course, the tourists are starting to come back. But why does this music have a resonance for you to that time when it was deserted?
I knew that the piece of music for a film that was called Anonymous Venetian, and is something quite melancholic, but at the same time, during that film, it was, you could see the Venice of a long time ago, of things that still exist till now, like some fishermen that they do the same job from 2,000 years, like the soft crab, and you see the old artisans. It's something that give me, in a way, you can still find some of them, but it's a melancholy to see them, they disappeared. But in the pandemic, at the beginning, was not so sad, Venice, without anyone, if I have to tell you the truth, going around. It's more sad now, in the last months, when you see all the shop completely closed, that they lost their job and they had to go away. That makes me more sad.
You've chosen several pieces, Francesco, which have those repeated chords at the beginning. Bum, bum,
it's
bum,
strange.
Bum.
Yes.
Winter, the cold song. Very interesting. Yeah. Maybe it's your foot. Maybe it's your footfall as you walk around Venice.
Yeah, maybe that. There is the rhythm. At the same time, I found this song so delicate.
Katharina Spreckelsen was the soloist in the slow movement from Alessandro Marcello's Oboe Concerto in D minor, with Harry Bickett directing the English concert. Francesco, when we think of Italy, one of the first things that comes to mind is food. And you've written a cookery book about Venetian food. Now, people will be listening to this programme as they're preparing their Sunday lunch. So I wonder, what is your favourite recipe? What might you suggest for lunch today?
Oh, I love to do spaghetti with sardines, peanuts. I love that. And onions. I love to do that one.
Well, how do you actually put the sardines in with the spaghetti? Do you put them in little bits?
Okay,
or do you put them whole?
First I start with the onions. The onions, you put them with some oil and you have to become, that the onions become the color of gold. Then you put the sardines, and then in the other pot there is the water with the spaghetti. Bigoli is the thicker one. And when there is the mixture of all the grapes inside with the sardines, the onion, before that the pasta is ready, something like 2 or 3 minutes before that is ready, you take the pasta and you put without the water inside the pan with all the rest. So also the spaghetti get the taste of the sardines, of the onions, of the grape. And I love that. I really love that.
Well, you've already got the taste buds watering. Another great Italian passion, of course, nationally, is music. Is it true that all Italians can sing, or just some of them?
I don't know. When I've sung a little, depends the mood and how much I've drunk. Maybe I drank. I sing better when I'm drunk.
Well, maybe we'll catch you singing along with this final piece, because it's almost a national anthem, isn't it, for Italy? It's Puccini's much-loved aria, O mio babbino caro. Have you known this ever since you were a caro bambino?
Yeah, I heard it different times, but this girl that is asking what I have to do with this love, and is something that is really touching when there are things bigger than love that destroy the love. And that is something that always made me thinking, like something like is connected to Romeo and Juliet or things like that.
Well, Francesco D'Amosto, thank you so much for giving us an intoxicating taste of Italy and Venice in particular. Thank you.
Thank you. Grazie.
Thank you.
Barbara Hendricks singing O Mio Babbino Caro from Gianni Schicchi by Puccini. Paavo Järvi was conducting the Radio France Philharmonic Orchestra. That was the final choice of Michael Barclay's guest on Private Passions today, Francesco De Mosto. The episode was produced by Jane Greenwood and it was a Loftus Media production for BBC Radio 3. And you can find details of all today's music if you search for Private Passions on BBC Sounds, where you can also download hundreds of previous editions. The programme returns next Sunday at noon, when Michael Barclay will be in conversation with Sister Teresa Keswick.
Radio 3 marks Palm Sunday with music for Holy Week from across Europe, as well as sacred choral and contemporary works from Denmark and Latvia in the evening. There's a performance of Bach's sublime masterpiece, the St. John Passion, live from Amsterdam in the afternoon. A star lineup of soloists joins the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra and Andrew Manzi. That's Music for Holy Week from Europe, starting at 1 o'clock next Sunday afternoon on Radio 3 and BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, digital radio and on BBC Sounds. It's 1 o'clock, time for the news with me, Jane Royce. The Foreign Secretary, Liz Truss, has condemned what she described as atrocities in areas around the Ukrainian capital after reports of indiscriminate killing of civilians by retreating Russian forces. Liz Truss said the acts in towns outside Kyiv must be investigated as war crimes. Journalists have reported seeing at least 20 bodies in civilian clothing on just one street in Bucha. The president of the European Council, Charles Michel, has promised further sanctions against Moscow. The Russian Defence Ministry has dismissed the claims as fake. Elsewhere in Ukraine, Russia has carried out a series of missile strikes on the Black Sea port of Odessa and other targets in central and southern areas. The Russian Defence Ministry said its forces had destroyed fuel storage facilities in Odessa. The Transport Secretary, Grant Shapps, has said that energy will not be rationed in the UK after Labour suggested the government should have contingency plans. Germany and Austria, which are both heavily reliant on Russian gas, have activated emergency plans which include rationing if necessary. Other European countries also have plans in place. The president of Pakistan has dissolved parliament on the advice of the prime minister Imran Khan, who survived a move to oust him. The deputy speaker of the parliament dismissed a no-confidence motion against the government, saying it was unconstitutional. Fresh elections are now expected in the coming weeks. Police are investigating up to 40 vehicles were set on fire north of Bristol early this morning. The Avon and Somerset force is asking for witnesses and anyone with dashcam footage to come forward. The port of Dover says many roads approaching the ferry terminal are now free-flowing after disruption yesterday led to waits of up to 9 hours for drivers. Operations at the port have been reduced largely because of the suspension of P&O services. Australia have beaten England by 71 runs to win the Women's Cricket World Cup final in New Zealand. The Australians broke records in Christchurch. They scored 356 for 5, with Alyssa Healy hitting 170 of those runs. The defending champions were all out for 285 in reply, with Nat Siver making 148 for England. And the weather, there'll be showers in England and Wales this afternoon. It'll be cloudy elsewhere with rain moving in from the northwest. The rain will be heavy and persistent at times and wintry on the hills. BBC News at 1:02.
Lose yourself in a great performance every afternoon.
We had a concert by the Zefiro Ensemble from Melk Abbey, which is this fabulous Baroque extravaganza high up on the rocks above the Danube. And the sound they made was just so burnished and gorgeous, it really felt like the perfect marriage of music and setting. I am a bit of an 18th century fan, and I could almost believe I was at the court in Dresden listening to the pieces that have been